Hello and welcome to Saver Production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we're talking about grapefruit.
Yes, something several of you listeners have suggested recently because of some articles that have come out about how grapefruit interacts with certain medications. So thank you, as always, for the suggestions.
Yeah.
And I used to hate grapefruit. It used to be on my list of, at the time, it was then six things that I didn't like. but now it's been moved off. I love it. Yeah, and I'm on a bit of a grapefruit kick, especially I use the fresh juice in cocktails.
Oh,
and
Yes.
And I do feel like it's a, quote, New Year's food, and we are, believe it or not, approaching a new year.
Ooh.
I know. I've already had to plan out till 2021, and I was like, what is this?
Oh, no, that's weird. Nope.
Yep, I know. Because grapefruit has been so frequently associated with weight loss, it's certainly the first thing I think of when I think of grapefruit. And I got to say, if you're doing a resolution other than make this year better than 2020, more power to you. You're doing better than me. My therapist even said she's advising people to make really low-key resolutions for 2021.
I think that that's a really good of your therapist to be doing. I'm very happy that that's what's up. I totally, when you were saying like, oh, grapefruit is more of a New Year's thing, maybe, I was like, what, why? But then now that you mentioned the diet thing, I'm like, oh yeah, I just don't associate it with dieting. I know that it is like considered a diet food and certainly has been part of fad diets, but I grew up eating grapefruit for breakfast because it was delicious. I more associate it with that and with cocktails, than with anything else. So that medication thing is a whole thing. That's a thing that I learned about. We'll talk about it more a couple times throughout the rest of this episode. We've done other citrus fruits before. We did the orange for sure. What else have we done?
Yes.
Did we do lemons or limes? what have
I
we done?
We did limes.
Okay.
We've done limes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, and I feel like grapefruit came up in a few episodes, but probably in our orange one, and I think in our fad diet one, because I told Lauren, I was like, have we already done grapefruit? But I would have remembered this medication thing because it's fascinating. So.
Oh, yeah. It really is.
Yeah. Which I guess brings us to our question.
Yeah.
Grapefruit. What is it?
Well, a grapefruit is a large type of citrus fruit with both sweet and bitter flavors, sort of like softball sized, maybe 6 inches across. I didn't look up the conversion. Maybe 15 centimeters? Sure, let's call it that. And citrus fruits are vehicles for individually wrapped drops of juice.
Really?
I mean, you could call them that. Sure.
You certainly just did. So.
I guess that's what it is now, suckers.
The power of Lauren Vogelbaum.
As I often say, we are the music makers and we are the dreamers of the dreams. grapefruit, botanical name, Citrus exparadisi. Grapefruits grow on evergreen trees that usually are grown to about 20 feet or 6 meters tall, but can reach over twice that. They are a semi-tropical tree. They do better in warm, rainy climates. They've got dark, glossy green leaves, and they bear these pretty white flowers, either alone or in clusters, that, when pollinated, will develop this fruit with like a greenish skin that ripens to a yellow to pink color. That skin is thin and full of these heavily scented, very aromatic oils. And then under that contains this layer of spongy white pith that's technically edible, but is super bitter, and acts as a cushion for the many tiny vesicles inside. And vesicles is the fancy word for those little membranes with just a drop of juice in them that are further protected by these outer membranes in these segments, sort of like a juicy three-dimensional pie.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I like that. I like that. You know, I'm a big fan of pie.
Yes, citrus are the 3D pies of the fruit world. that juice and therefore the flesh of this fruit can be kind of clearish to pale yellow to pink to ruby in color. And the flavor of the juice is sort of sweet, tart, and floral. A little bit of bitter in there too, yeah. And the fruit segments or the juice from it can be eaten or drank plain and raw, but you can also use them fresh in salads as a flavoring in stuff like mixed drinks or baked goods or dressings, or in marinades for various proteins or cooked down into jams or candies. The peel can also be eaten or pressed for its oil, although it is more bitter and more floral flavored than the fruit. So a little bit goes a long way there. And speaking of.
Yes. So what about the nutrition?
Grapefruit is pretty good for you. It's got a good smattering of vitamins and minerals. Vitamins A and C and potassium are up there. And if you eat the pulp, that's some good fiber. They are sugary, but perhaps less so than many other fruits. Overall, I'd say it's a good punch of flavor for a low caloric load. They'll help fill you up, but to keep you going, it should be paired with some protein and fat. And there is a lot of medical research about grapefruit out there, but a lot more needs to be done. Some research has indicated that grapefruit may help control blood sugar levels and also lipid levels in the body, both of which may help control body weight and also certain conditions like diabetes and cardiovascular diseases. However, you should not eat or drink grapefruit products if you're on certain medications, because grapefruit contains these compounds that can mess with your body's uptake and breakdown of those medications. Like, basically, if you're taking any daily med, you should probably Google about it or ask your pharmacist or healthcare provider. But yeah, more on that later on.
Yes. And numbers-wise, they're kind of hard to come by. I feel like I got catfished by this one article that promised me it was all grapefruit numbers, but it was all orange numbers. And I'm like, those are different. Got pretty righteously outraged. So we don't have much, but the U.S. is the largest producer of grapefruit. Primarily, these grapefruit are grown in Florida and California. 3/4 of the grapefruits consumed by Americans are red grapefruits.
And yet the numbers are a little bit sticky. I saw conflicting numbers in a couple different places, and it's sometimes like difficult to separate out the fruit numbers overall from the juice numbers, from the processed juice numbers, from the oil numbers. I'm not sure what specific statistic the article that you got, the primarily grown in Florida number, was looking at. I've seen that China is the largest producer overall. I think that they're the largest exporter, but this is also a vaguely persnickety fruit crop that can really be affected by weather conditions. If you get too much or too little freeze going on, it can really mess up your grapefruit crop. So yeah. In short, It's a little bit complicated, and I didn't spend the time today to untangle it. So, sorry about that. If all you needed to know in this world was who produces the most grapefruit, I'm letting you down.
Or you're giving somebody an excellent vengeance quest. Their whole life is going to be defined by the one day they listen to this food podcast, were determined to get the number of grapefruit, and they didn't get it, and it shapes their whole future. So maybe it's a gift you're giving.
Well, you know, if this kicks off your vengeance quest, then you're welcome. And I'm sorry about the monster that I have made you into. I feel
the grapefruit number monster.
I feel like the food podcast Batman right now. I'm like, oh no, I'm accidentally creating my own enemies.
Yeah, but you know, then you're gonna have to work together to get to the bottom of the grapefruit numbers, and you'll forge a like grudging relationship where, you know, you need each other, you don't like each other, but you recognize that the talents and skills you each have. So I think it'll work out.
Yeah. Eventually there'll be weird fic written about us. It'll be terrific. So
yes. Oh, I'm excited now. Grapefruit food podcaster Batman fanfiction. It needs to exist. If it doesn't already, just a shame. But we're going to put a pin in that for now.
Yes, just for right now, because we do have some history for you. But first, we've got a quick break for a word from our sponsors.
We're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, grapefruit is actually not that old. Nope. I almost never get to say that. Especially with like a fruit. I mean, sometimes with something invented in a lab but with a fruit.
With a fruit, yeah, it's usually like, well, this has been around for millions and millions of years and it's been, harvested by humans for most of that time and
Yes. And the ancient citrus ancestors of grapefruit do go back to 6 million years, 5 million years ago, really, really old. But the grapefruit itself only goes back to the 18th century or maybe the 15th century, somewhere in there. We'll talk about why it's confusing in a second. Mm-hmm. So young. The grapefruit story is wild and weird. It was a hybrid, the result of chance breeding of an East Asian sweet orange and the Javanese pomelo on Barbados. And Barbados itself is kind of odd in the story, too, given the most direct ancestor, the pomelo most likely originates from Malaysia or Indonesia. At the time, citrus growers already knew that these plants hybridized naturally. So many growers took great care to prevent that. Mm-hmm. But still, others didn't really care. And all of this is part of why the early history of the grapefruit is so murky. The word grapefruit itself wasn't recorded in the existing written record until the 1830s or the discovered written record. Prior to that, it may have been referred to as shaddock, the word for pomelo. So again, confusion.
Confusion all around, yeah.
All around the grapefruit. In 1750, Griffith Hughes penned a history of the fruits on Barbados, including a tree he dubbed the Golden Orange that produced, quote, the forbidden fruit, in his words. The most delicious, he called them. Many historians believe he was describing grapefruit, while others, they conducted this really intense historical citrus research. And they believe that the golden orange was the grapefruit and the forbidden fruit was actually something else entirely. Oh. Hmm. Yeah. And speaking of, let's look at the name, because the name adds a layer of confusion to this whole thing.
Right.
I've never really thought about this before, but when people pointed it out, I was like, oh yeah, that is kind of weird. Conventional wisdom has long suggested that the grape in grapefruit comes from the fact that grapefruit grows in bunches similar to grapes.
Like I said earlier, those flowers sometimes grow in clusters. And so on clustering flower trees, you get these, it's not like a bunch like grapes would grow in, but it is like a weird cluster of these giant heckin' fruit. So sure, I can see the resemblance.
Yeah. However, not everybody buys that. Some people suggest that the grape part of this name actually comes from the description of a fruit on Barbados, most likely the grapefruit, but we don't know for sure, from Dutch physician Wouter Schouten in 1644. He wrote that the fruit tasted, quote, like unripe grapes. A Jamaican plantation owner and enslaver named John Lunan echoed this sentiment in 1814, claiming grapefruit got the name, quote, on account of its resemblance in flavor to the grape. However, if you're listening to this, you're scratching your chin, you may know grapefruit doesn't really taste like grapes. And in fact, there weren't vine grapes on Barbados until at least 1698, possibly much later than that, meaning that the people writing these comparisons of grapefruit to grape may have actually never tried grapes.
Huh.
Yeah. So I guess we'll chalk that one up to mysteries of history. Also of note, grapefruit was already associated with health at this time.
Huh.
The grapefruit wasn't grown commercially in the U.S. until the 19th century in Florida, where it quickly went from something kind of like an oddity, maybe ornamental, to an essential cash crop for farmers. Historians frequently give credit to the introduction of the grapefruit to mainland America to Frenchman Odette Philippe in the 1820s. He settled in what would become St. Petersburg, Florida, and set about erecting massive grapefruit plantations because it was his favorite fruit. Philippe may or may not have been a Black person, but he also owned enslaved people and definitely was not wanted in the area by the local indigenous peoples. Not too long after, in 1862, Kimball Chase Atwood moved south of Tampa Bay in Florida after making his fortune in the insurance company, insurance world, I guess, in New York City, and he planted 16,000 grapefruit trees. One of his workers discovered a pink grapefruit growing in 1910, as opposed to the typical grapefruit that was yellowish-white on the inside, typical for the time. This led to the production of the ruby red grapefruit in 1929 in Florida, an enormously popular variety that catapulted Atwood to the top of grapefruit producers. And still at the time, the grapefruit was often regarded as a luxury.
Yeah, definitely. But before refrigeration techniques and all of those means of distribution, citrus was expensive. I mean, you had to ship it. You had to make sure that it arrived safely. It doesn't really ripen after it's been picked, so you have to strike this balance between picking it when it's ripe and then getting it to the place that it needs to be before it's, you know, no longer good.
Right. And I read articles about how the citrus industry helped make Florida what it is today, which I thought was fascinating. So during all of this, during this time, a cold winter decimated much of the citrus industry in the Carolinas and Georgia in 1835. So people moved south into Florida if they were going to grow citrus fruits. Towards the end of the century, railroads allowed for transportation of citrus fruits out of Florida to all around the country. And this was such a big industry. One of the rail lines was called the Orange Belt Railway.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah.
One of the details that always sticks with me in Laura Ingalls Wilder's books is that, like, they would sometimes get an orange in the stocking of their, and it was so fancy. We've talked about this before. Yeah. I still think it's fancy.
We did in our orange episode. It made me really appreciate just how spoiled I am in terms of if I want an orange, I can get one probably any time of year.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm.
Or a grapefruit. Go ahead.
Or grapefruit. By 1893, grapefruit, most likely introduced by Spanish missionaries, was introduced in Texas. That's when the first recorded instance of a grove was we know of anyway. A developer named John H. Sherry was convinced citrus was the future of Texas, a future he believed was possible thanks to new irrigation techniques. He grew white-seeded grapefruit over 16,000 acres in 1914 and had his first shipment ready to go in 1920. Sometime around 1929, a pink grapefruit tree was discovered, and that led to the birth of the Texas red grapefruit industry. Sherry is known by some as the father of the citrus industry, a claim I did not have time to fact check for veracity. I do think it's funny. Anytime we do an episode on a food thing that's sort of, in the United States at least, generally associated with a certain state, I feel like there's always one other state that's like, wait, but don't forget about us. Because a lot of my search results were specifically about Texas and Texas's grapefruit industry and its history with that, which I thought was really great. So as grapefruit became more common, people were kind of perplexed as to how to eat them. Companies stepped in, touting the benefits of their products with grapefruit, and early 20th century cookbooks mainly featured grapefruit in sweet confectionery recipes or as an ingredient in salads. However, most people ate it halved with a dash of sugar, sometimes topped with a cherry, I guess, if you're feeling fancy. Mm-hmm. The first iteration of the grapefruit diet, which is generally a very restrictive, low-calorie diet that involves grapefruit and is considered unsafe, was recorded in the 1930s. It went on to inspire a Weird Al Yankovic parody to the tune of Zoot Zoot Riot. By the 1940s, the U.S. was exporting about 11 million cases of grapefruit and almost half a million canned sections. Between 1945 and 1946, the U.S. produced 2,285,000 tons of grapefruit, and Jamaica, Israel, Trinidad, Brazil, and other parts of South America also became significant producers. During the World Wars, companies like Morton Salt purported the deliciousness of grapefruit sprinkled with salt in American ad campaigns. A 1946 Morton's ad in Life magazine proclaimed, "Grapefruit tastes sweeter with salt." This was in part due to sugar rationing. During the wars, the grapefruit growers were worried about sales of the fruit if people couldn't douse them in sugar. In 1919, the Florida Citrus Exchange ran an ad campaign that posited the grapefruit, quote, "need no sugar and never should have much." A 1943 Morton's ad turned the combo into a patriotic duty, this combo of salt and grapefruit. Quote, "vitamin-rich grapefruit, a victory food special, is one of the fruits Uncle Sam advises you to eat." The campaign was effective enough that it went on beyond the wars. It went into the 1950s after sugar rationing had ended. They weren't the first to promote this. Morton's wasn't. A national advice column printed in 1911 recommended the salting of grapefruit, and people wrote in voicing their support for this practice, including this, quote, "I think you will find that many Southerners always salt their grapefruit." And apparently, this is still a thing in the South. This doesn't surprise me. It reminds me of, like, salting watermelon, but I had never heard of it or seen it.
Now that you mentioned it, I'm like, I think my grandmother probably salted her grapefruit. Memories, who knows? However, either way, there is actually some science there because, diminishes our ability to taste bitter flavors, on your tongue or in your mouth. It kind of blocks up some of the, bitter flavor receptors that you've got in there. So when you salt your grapefruit, it will taste sweeter because of that diminished capacity to taste bitter. Salt can also make volatile compounds, you know, like odors in your food more volatile. It like helps unlock them from water. So you may experience more of the fragrance of grapefruit as you're eating it if you've salted it. So
noted. If I want to make a situation more volatile, salt. Throw some salt. See what happens.
There you go.
Yes. Simultaneously, this grapefruit Americans were eating itself was changing throughout the decades, becoming sweeter, redder, often seedless. Grapefruit was Florida's most profitable export crop in 1980. About a decade earlier, Mexico got in growing grapefruit as well. The lime and grapefruit diet drink Fresca was introduced in 1966. Apparently, President LBJ was really into it and bullied people into drinking it and used it as kind of a power move.
Okay. I didn't know that this was intended as a diet drink. I'm like, has the formula changed? Because now it's like as chock full of sugar as any soda.
Right.
So.
Well, I wonder if it's that thing of like anything that has fruit in it,
right,
we believe is more in it, not necessarily at all, especially the sugar level.
Right. Research,
I don't know,
for another day.
Yes, but I do want to tell my Fresca story. I'm gonna try to tie it up in a neat bow because it's one of my better stories. okay, here we go. I was visiting my cousins in Florida for the first time, and I was 9 years old, and they snuck me in to see the rated R film Air Force One.
And
it highly disturbed me. And I was alone in the hotel room, even though my cousins were supposed to stay with me. I was younger, like pretty decently younger than all of them. And, you know, you don't want to hang out with your younger cousin. So I was watching Angels in the Outfield and I saw this white van come by and it was spraying this gas. And I thought, terrorist, because I'd just seen this movie that I had no rights to be seeing. And I was like, I'm going to die. What do I do? I know. I want to get drunk. So I went to the refrigerator and there was a six-pack of Fresca, and I thought it was beer, so I drank all six of them, and then I ran outside screaming, we're all going to die. I ran past my parents, the hotel room my parents and my aunt and uncle were staying in, and I was running by their window, and I fell in a drainage pipe and broke my ankle, and that's my Fresca story.
Well, Annie, I'm really glad that it was Fresca and not beer.
Yes.
But
I've never had a Fresca since.
I'm sad that you broke your ankle and that you were experiencing a moment of fear. But I'm glad that you can laugh about it now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my cousin's gotten huge trouble. I've never seen Air Force One again either. And in fact, it left me with a lingering fear of Gary Oldman. Still hangs over me to this day.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's acting for you. That's acting. You know, Gary Oldman's good.
But all right, forget that. Let's talk drug interactions.
Oh yeah, yeah. Good segue. Yes.
Segues. We're good at them. So in a London, Ontario lab in 1989, clinical pharmacologist David Bailey discovered grapefruit's truly bizarre impacts on certain medications. He later said of the discovery, quote, the hard part about it was that most people didn't believe our data because it was so unexpected. A food had never been shown to produce a drug interaction like this, as large as this, ever. He was testing a blood pressure drug, and particularly if it had any negative effects, interactions with alcohol.
Because alcohol lowers blood pressure, and this medication also lowers blood pressure. So he wanted to see whether adding alcohol to the medication would lower blood pressure, like, too much, because that can lead to passing out, stuff like that. Yeah, bad times.
Right, bad times. And to test this, he wanted to do a double-blind study, meaning no one would know that they were in the group with the alcohol or not.
Right.
So he needed to hide the taste of the alcohol to keep it from the participants, which group they were in, mm-hmm. the group testing the alcohol and the group not testing it. According to him, his wife got the idea to hide the taste of alcohol with grapefruit juice, and it was the only thing that worked in his telling of the story. They tried a bunch of things. Grapefruit juice worked. So one group got straight-up grapefruit juice, while the other got grapefruit juice with alcohol. Both groups displayed about four times higher the drug levels in their systems than what was expected given the actual dosage. After isolating out other variables, the only thing that could explain it was the grapefruit juice. So Bailey decided to perform an experiment on himself, since the drug he was testing wasn't dangerous at high levels. Sure enough, the combination of the drug and grapefruit juice produced five times the amount of the drug in his system than should have been present. Follow-up tests produced the same results. Bailey eventually got to the bottom of it. Basically, very, very basically, it involves an enzyme in the small intestine that breaks down things to inactive forms, which drug makers take into account when calculating dosages, and a compound called foranocoumarins, something that grapefruit has a lot of. This compound shuts down those enzymes so that the body has to produce new ones, a process that can take up to 12 hours. This means that all the careful dosage calculations drug makers did are gone. They're out the mm-hmm. window because they made those calculations expecting those enzymes to be functioning properly. Just a cup of grapefruit can do this.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very small amounts of grapefruit juice can shut down enough of those enzymes in your body, and everyone has a different amount of these enzymes, to have an effect on certain drugs that you take. Because drug makers just assume that those enzymes in your small intestine are going to affect some of that drug. So you can wind up with too much of a drug entering your bloodstream. And the same enzyme is also found in the human liver, and large enough doses of grapefruit can affect its function there too. So that not only is more of the drug going to be entering your bloodstream because the enzymes in your small intestine just kind of like let it all out. They were just like, yeah, sure, go, be free. but furthermore, when it gets to your liver, those enzymes are shut down there too. So So the drug will last longer in your system. It's not going to get broken down and flushed out of your body as quickly by your liver. So it's not only a stronger effect, but it's also going on for longer. And you can also wind up with too little of a drug in your system because of grapefruit, because there are these other compounds in grapefruit that can block the action of some chemical transporters. And these are the proteins that allow certain compounds to get into your cells. And this applies to some medications, like for example, the allergy medication Allegra. Grapefruit will make it less effective because it prevents it from getting into your cells. Other fruit juices can have the same effect. It's wild.
Wow, it is wild. Grapefruit messes with over 100 drugs, including some extremely common ones, varying from being a perfectly safe interaction to an incredibly deadly one. While there are no real numbers, it is a safe guess that eating grapefruit has killed people. And I know two people personally who stopped having grapefruit for interactions with their medication.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking of, like, you know, and you just have the medication bottle and it has the, like, glass of presumably alcohol and, like, a big X over it. What if we had, like, a grapefruit on there? Like, no! Do not take with grapefruit, which apparently is already a thing in Canada.
And it is also in, like, the fine print of medication labels in the United States. Like, you know, that kind of, like, mini booklet that you get kind of like stapled to your drug bag, your little packet. It will be in the fine print in there. But I mean, if you, like me, just go, oh, sure, whatever. Don't do that. you should read that stuff. But I didn't include a list of all the medications it can affect in here because it can affect, like, certain groups of medications, but not every medication within that group, because the mechanisms through which they work are different. The molecules are different. And so really the best thing to do, if you're a savvy internet human, is to just Google the name of the medication and grapefruit, and the internet should tell you. But if you have any concerns about any medication ever, don't take my advice. Ask your pharmacist or other healthcare provider. Because it really depends on the drug in question to know how dangerous this can be. For some drugs, it's a direct effect, like lowering your blood pressure so much that you might pass out, or maybe suppressing an immune response too hard for too long. For other drugs, it can be a secondary issue of, like, creating like a buildup of that drug in your system to the point that it could cause damage, first of all, to your muscles and liver, because they're the ones kind of dealing with it, but secondarily to your kidneys, as they wind up working overtime to flush this stuff out. So bad times all around, for example, a lot of SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, can be affected by that. So if you're on anxiety or depression meds, definitely watch out for that. I am one of those humans who had to really cut back my grapefruit intake, and I'm mad about it because I love grapefruit. I'm on like kind of a lot of Lexapro because it helps with anxiety and depression, and I love that. But I don't want it to go wonky, so I just choose to not do grapefruit related stuff. And makes me so mad.
Like a drug. just say no to grapefruit.
Just say yeah. When I'm like going through a cocktail list, like I'll get like a little bit palpably angry. I'll be like, why did you put that delicious ingredient in there? Also, I know I shouldn't really have that much booze while I'm on this medication, but like in small doses, it's okay. You can kind of manage it. Anyway.
Oh, wow. Well, the most dangerous experience I had with a grapefruit was also my cousin's. We were trying to play, they were trying to teach me how to play golf. And I was using a grapefruit and I swung and I hit it
as
really
a
hard
golf
in the juice.
You were using a grapefruit? Is it?
Yeah. Well, they were just trying to get me to hit it because I kept missing the smaller ball. So they gave me something bigger, but then I got juice in the eye and it really hurt. And
oh,
that was
man,
the end of my golf career.
Wow. So broken ankle and nixed golf career are.
But I still love you, Grapefruit. I highly recommend to anyone who's interested. I mean, like we say frequently, you never know where the research will take you. Mm-hmm. This is fascinating, and the headlines are hilarious. Like,
oh yeah,
the bizarre grapefruit messing with your drugs or whatever. it's really fun. So recommend.
Yeah. Take it into due consideration. Don't hit grapefruits with golf clubs, and no. Don't take them on top of medication without checking first.
Yes, one of those is more important than the other, but I feel like both are worth saying. In the meantime, that's pretty much what we have to say about grapefruit for today.
It is. We do have some listener mail for you, but first we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with
listener mail.
This is a sour, puckery face. But normally, I guess that would be more in the back of the throat.
Yeah.
I got to work on my voice, my vocal work. But,
you know, we're all getting there.
Desiree wrote, as Thanksgiving approaches, I can't help but think about Annie's tradition of cheese-giving, and it brings to mind a story I'd like to share. At the beginning of 2020, I had a mountain of New Year's resolutions, but sadly, given COVID lockdown, most of them have fallen apart, except what turned out to be my favorite. My boyfriend and I decided 2020 was going to be our year of cheese, with a goal to eat lots of different fancy cheeses as often as possible. We started the project on New Year's Day with a cheese board made up of those little $2 end discards from the fancy cheese counter at Whole Foods, along with a detailed rating system for the tasting so we could keep track of what we liked. This worked out fantastically, and we were so into it that all through January and February, we tried a new cheese once a week, every week, with no sign of slowing down. Well, fast forward through 2020 and all its stresses, and our new cheese obsession turned into a real comfort project. Aww. Something to look forward to in all the uncertainty and isolation. We got engaged back in March, and since it happened during our year of cheese, we took a picture of my newly blinged hand reaching into a plate of extra cheesy nachos to make it Instagram official.
Huh.
Quite the feat, since I'm not left-handed. And then, once it became clear that COVID would be pushing our original 2021 wedding date, we threw together a cheese-themed Zoom elopement ceremony in our living room, complete with cheese-themed bunting altar, cheese earrings, cheese pens, and my close friend even sent us a package of fancy cheese in the mail to serve as our cheese plate wedding meal.
Oh my gosh.
Photos of the event were only iPhone quality for obvious reasons, so when I had our elopement announcements made, I had my best friend do an artistic rendering of what our wedding would have looked like in Cheeseland. My husband, Brian, in a suit made of Swiss cheese with jalapeno buttons, and me in a gooey, cheesy veil and dress, both of us sharing a plate of nachos, as it should be. Both of us in our happy place.
Oh my gosh, that is glorious. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
It sounds like y'all have both really found, like, a worthy partner.
Yes.
That is so sweet.
It is sweet and amazing, and it sounds like your year of cheese has been a real success. So I much applause to you.
Yes.
The invitations were spectacular. All the pictures were spectacular. So thank you so much for sharing that. Congratulations.
Yes.
More cheese in your future.
Oh, a beautiful future of cheese together. Heather wrote, I started your burger episode and got about 10 minutes into it when I had to pause to share, welcome to Halifax Burger Week. Usually in late March, for a week, dozens of restaurants in Halifax will coax people out of their houses in dreary Nova Scotia winters with the promise of delicious burgers. If you can think of it, someone has put it on a burger. This event is thrown as a fundraiser for Feed Nova Scotia, the local network of food banks, with a portion of sales donated. the brunt of COVID's first wave hit us here in March, causing a postponement in this year's celebrations, but did take place in October of this year, over 10 days when restaurants reopened. My fiancé and I only made it to one spot this year as we're not eating out as much, but got to at least 5 of them last year. I know people who ate at least 20 different burgers over the week. Pro tip, wear stretchy pants. To give you an idea of the scope of Burger Week, I have included a link to this year's Burger Passport. The passport is usually released a couple of weeks beforehand and is crucial in planning a strategy for the week. I've also attached some pictures of past burgers, including a donut burger. Burger Week last year coincided with a local gourmet donut shop's birthday. So is born the birthday burger. A bacon cheeseburger with chipotle sauce with a glazed donut sliced in half for a bun, complete with a candle. It shouldn't work, but it does. We have several places to get a good burger here anyway, but for a burger lover, this week is better than Christmas. It's been growing in popularity every year, and the restaurants have been getting more and more imaginative.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
Oh, I love
it. Oh, my gosh. Burger Week. I did get a burger after we did that episode.
You did?
Good. I caved.
Hey, no. I think that's important. I don't think I have since then. I think I got distracted by some other food craving. But anyway, I'll get around to it.
Yes. It was wonderful. thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@savorpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at SavorPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.